Chapter 7. Major Mistakes to Avoid. I've turned up to costume parties in the wrong costume. I've made social faux pas aplenty. I've put one foot in front of the other and fallen over. Benedict Cumberbatch. Everyone makes faux pas every now and then. Everyone has the occasional foot-in-the-mouth moment. The ubiquity of the problem, however, doesn't make it any less excruciating. This chapter focuses on common conversation sins that you should avoid if you want to prevent awkwardness and embarrassment in social interactions. While you can't foresee every possible gaffe you'll ever make, there are some fundamental things to pay attention to and bad habits to avoid. Some might seem obvious, but others will not be as black and white, since they depend on the situation at hand. Before we continue, however, let's discuss what you should do if you catch yourself making a mistake. First of all, assess how severe the damage actually is. Try to gauge if anyone in the conversation is offended. If no one's offended, or perhaps you've just overshared or rambled somewhat, then the best thing to do is quickly show self-awareness, laugh at yourself, and then just move on. By contrast, if you were inadvertently rude or said something offensive, a brief apology is enough to ease the tension and move the conversation forward. Avoid being defensive, making excuses, or lingering on your faux pas. Now, I want to stress this. You must move on from awkwardness rather than prolonging it. If you keep apologizing, you risk lingering on the topic that caused the offense. Though the interaction may haunt you for a few days, try not to share that mental anguish at the time. And to be frank, give yourself a break. Everyone makes social mistakes now and again. Now that we know what to do if we make a mistake, let's look at some of the most common sins people make in conversation. Hopefully, you'll be able to avoid them and save yourself the need to apologize in the first place. The first mistake is foregoing standard courtesies. Sometimes we overlook the little social courtesies that start a conversation or keep it going. As small as these might seem, it can be very jarring when they're not followed. If someone doesn't shake your hand when offered or fails to remember your name, it's natural to feel thrown off at the start of a conversation. So try not to put someone else in that position. Make sure you observe the standard courtesies we're about to discuss to avoid a conversation becoming awkward before it begins. These include the following. First is remembering names. Some people find it tricky to remember names. If you're one of those people, try using memorization strategies to help you retain and recall the names. Memory expert and author Joshua Foer gives a great tip. When you meet someone, think of an image that corresponds to their name. For example, if you meet Bill, you might imagine him with a duck bill. If you meet Vicky, try picturing her holding a key. For example, Vic Key. It doesn't matter if the connection between your person's name and your image is tangential. It can still be enough to jog your memory. In some cases, the mental work of putting the system in place may be enough for you to remember their name in the future. That said, it's inevitable that you'll occasionally forget someone's name. If you do, apologize and just ask for their name again. Relying on other reference, like, "Hey, you," or "Hi, man," is pretty transparent, so there's little point in pretending. However, if you do ask someone to repeat their name once, make a special note to remember it in the future. If you have to ask for it multiple times, you're signaling to them that you don't think that they're worth remembering. Next is handshakes. The practice of handshakes is said to be rooted in traditions dating back to the beginning of human history. One theory is that it was meant to show a stranger you weren't holding any weapons in your primary hand. Another is that handshaking was popularized by 18th century Quakers, who wanted a standard greeting across all social classes, as opposed to bowing or curtsying. Regardless of what you believe, they have one thing in common. Handshaking signifies friendliness and respect. As a general rule, consider the context and whether it's expected. If the other person is not expecting a handshake, don't extend your hand and force them into the gesture. Equally, not offering your hand when it is expected can make you seem standoffish and rude. Now, how do you convey the right message with a handshake? Consider the guidelines of the Etiquette School of New York. Number 1. Make sure you are always prepared for a handshake, with both hands visible, and that you're standing when the handshake begins. Number 2. Make good eye contact and offer a genuine smile. Number 3. Face the other person directly and lean slightly towards them. Number 4. Extend your hand with the thumb facing up and the other fingers out. Your palms should not be facing up or down. 5. Don't begin the handshake until your palms are fully touching. 6. Shake from the elbow in 2 smooth pumps. Don't shake from the wrist or the shoulder. And finally, number 7. Maintain equal pressure throughout the handshake, matching the pressure of the other person's hand. Of course, there are, once again, some cultural differences with handshakes. In China and Singapore, handshakes are done with a slight bow. In the United Arab Emirates, handshakes are lingering and you should not pull your hand away, even if it seems to go on for a long time. In parts of Southern Europe or Central and South America, handshakes are less firm and slightly longer, with your free hand likely touching the clasped hands or the other person's elbow. While many cultures accept that foreigners may not know their local etiquette, understanding these differences and applying them where you go is always a plus. The second major mistake is bringing up inappropriate topics. No one intentionally talks about inappropriate topics unless they're being deliberately antisocial. The trick is avoiding accidentally stumbling into them. To avoid inappropriate topics, don't assume that what is uncontroversial to you is also uncontroversial to others. Try to foster a curious and non-judgmental attitude when you start a conversation. This way, you'll learn more about other people's perspectives and avoid insulting them accidentally. Generally, avoid topics that tend to be polarizing. These include religion, politics, and many of the isms like racism, classism, and ageism, as these topics tend to be divisive and very emotionally charged. In fact, try to avoid even glib comments about them. A throwaway joke about religion might go down badly if you're speaking to a devoutly religious person. Again, don't make the mistake of assuming everyone thinks the way you do. Finally, be careful of contextually inappropriate topics. While most of us know to avoid religion and politics, many topics fall into a gray area. For example, asking someone if they have children can be neutral on some occasions, but can come off as too personal or even offensive on others. Another is asking how much something costs. While it's generally best to avoid asking how much something costs, it can be safe if you're talking to someone you know well or someone who knows you're considering purchasing the same thing. But it's typically not polite to ask a person you just met how much they spent on something. It's also best avoided if the item looks to be of higher value, like a watch, jewelry, or even a pair of shoes. You might be excited to brag how you got a great deal on that Polaroid camera, or have no issue talking about how much money you spent on a new luxury handbag. But not everyone is comfortable talking about money, especially to someone they don't know that well. One caveat about money is that the etiquette can differ significantly between cultures. For example, in China, questions about money and finance can be acceptable for small talk. So don't take offense if, on your next visit to Beijing, your taxi driver asks you how much you make a month or how much your hotel stay costs a night. The third mistake is interrogating. While we've talked about the importance of asking follow-up questions, it's just as important to make sure that your line of questioning doesn't start to resemble a police interrogation. you'll likely make this mistake when using small talk to find common interests. Say you ask an initial question, but you don't pick up any good conversation hooks. You then ask another, and another, and another. And at this point, the other person starts feeling defensive. You can avoid this by improving your ability to identify good conversation hooks, as finding a topic of shared interest will take fewer questions to draw out. In the meantime, however, if you catch yourself falling into the interrogative pattern, take a breath and switch up to a response with several conversation hooks, allowing the other person to ask you questions instead. And even if they don't pick up on your conversation hooks, you'll have broken up the interrogative pattern and given yourself a chance to reset. Another good strategy for avoiding interrogation is to avoid close-ended questions. Close-ended questions don't lend themselves to particularly long answers, so a series of them can feel a bit like an interrogation. Sticking to open-ended questions allows the other person to expand on their answers and hopefully throw out some conversation hooks for you to build on. The fourth major mistake is oversharing. Earlier, we talked about avoiding inappropriate topics when you meet someone new. This overlaps with the rule of not oversharing. When you're meeting people for the first time, avoid getting into personal topics like romance, sex, family issues, personal struggles, and psychological or physical health complications. If an acquaintance asks how your weekend was, don't discuss your brother's bout of depression or a crazy one-night stand that you had. On a side note, while disclosing your problems to a trusted friend is usually fine, if you make your personal issues a constant topic of conversation, you risk overwhelming even the closest of friendships with negativity. So it's best to be conscious of your sharing patterns, even with good friends or loved ones. When interacting with someone new, however, one instance where it's common to overshare is when you're faced with an uncomfortably long pause in the conversation. It's obviously counterproductive to fill a silence with overly personal information. But sometimes it happens, especially if you're trying to impress someone or establish a deeper connection with them. If you tend to overshare, make it a point to focus on allowing the other person to speak or ask a question. Alternatively, if a conversation is faltering, simply just let it end gracefully. Then, as we previously established, there is a fine line between oversharing and showing your vulnerability. Ultimately, it comes down to the context of the conversation and how well you know the other person. If you're at the water cooler with a new coworker, discussing an argument with your mother-in-law might be too much. However, if you're having coffee with a friend, it's less likely that expressing vulnerability will fall into oversharing. If you're unsure where the line is, remember that you can gradually test the waters by sharing a little and seeing how the other person reacts before going all in. The fifth major mistake is bragging and one-upping. Many people end up bragging to strangers or acquaintances because they think it will impress them. But this usually has the opposite effect. Sure, your achievements can make you more attractive in people's eyes, but not if you're tooting your own horn. This also applies to bragging about your partner, children, or other people close to you. Boasting about how amazing they are at poetry writing, oil painting, day trading, wine pairing, dog training, karate, or rock climbing are all an unsubtle proxy for bragging about yourself. If you keep mentioning your accomplishments, the other person will lose patience. It doesn't mean that you must keep putting yourself down, but you should apply a light touch when talking about yourself. Humility is a much more attractive trait, especially coupled with a quiet confidence, a self-assured posture, and a genuine smile. In the same vein, try to avoid one-upping the other person. This can be trickier because one-upping can happen accidentally when you pick up on conversation hooks. To go back to the example we used in a previous chapter, if someone mentions how they've recently joined the baseball team, saying that you were part of a successful baseball team in college will likely come off as one-upping. If you really want to relate your experiences, a better response would be simply saying that you played in college without mentioning any of the accolades. Instead, you might want to talk about your experiences when you first joined the team and invite the other person to share what their initial recruitment was like as well. What you don't want to do is jump into how good a player you were or the caliber of the team you were playing for. Inviting comparisons like this can make other people feel worse about themselves. Similarly, as we previously mentioned, don't try to one-up someone regarding negative events. Again, if someone says their family member has recently passed, don't bring up your own losses. It may seem like empathy, but it actually steals the focus from the other person's grief and makes the conversation about you. Instead, try to convey sympathy, or if you're appropriately close to the person in grief, ask questions to help them express or process their feelings. The sixth mistake is interrupting and hijacking. Connected to one-upping is the tendency to interrupt or hijack. The habit of interrupting can happen for several reasons. We may be particularly excited about something, worried that we might forget what we want to say, or overly eager to show that we're knowledgeable about a subject matter. We all make this mistake occasionally, but it should not become a habit. A general strategy to avoid interrupting is to commit to being interested in the other person. If you can foster curiosity about their point of view, you'll be better motivated to listen to them instead of cutting in. If you need a more overt way to keep yourself in check, try challenging yourself to not interrupt. For example, make it a point to not allow yourself to start a response until the person has finished talking, or use a tactile reminder such as putting a finger over your mouth when it's not your turn to speak. Hijacking, on the other hand, is a form of stealing focus where you shift the subject entirely to what you want to talk about. This can be very off-putting, given the impression that you don't care about what the other person is saying. For some, hijacking can result from feeling nervous or not knowing what to say. For example, if you're uncomfortable with silence, it can be tempting to cut into it with an abrupt topic change or turn the subject into something you know you can talk about. Instead, try to ask clarifying questions rather than make a statement or tell a story of your own. This forces you to pass the proverbial ball back to your counterpart, allowing them to fully participate in the conversation. The seventh mistake is being argumentative. If you know a lot about a topic or have strong feelings about it, it's sometimes tempting to argue a point or correct what people say. While arguing might feel good, you want to fight this instinct, especially if you don't know the other person well. Most people don't like being corrected and can feel attacked when it happens. This is mainly the case when meeting someone for the first time or chatting at an informal social event where people don't expect vigorous debates or fact-checking. And also, if we're honest, many corrections we throw out are pointless details. Suppose someone's telling a story about what they did last month. Their friend then interrupts them, pointing out that the story occurred on a Saturday and not a Sunday. The friend may be correct, but he's broken the flow of the anecdote for no good reason. Correcting can be obnoxious and stop the conversation in its tracks. It's even more so when you're correcting others on trivial things that don't affect the point of what they actually want to say. If you're trying to build connections, ask yourself if it's worth correcting someone's slight mispronunciation or minor factual mistake. Furthermore, don't fool yourself into thinking that they'll be grateful for your interruption. If anything, they'll feel a mild irritation or even an intense dislike. A temptation to argue is common among people who feel uncomfortable with small talk or like to discuss complex, abstract ideas. You might think that getting into a good debate is a great way of having deeper, more engaging conversation. However, this is very risky. If the other person wasn't expecting this level of conversation, you could come across as pushy and competitive. Of course, if you discover that the other person likes a good debate and this is what you have in common, then by all means, knock yourselves out. it's important to remember that if your goal is to connect with someone, that you need to be focused on them and not yourself. Often being bothered by people's mistakes and wanting to correct or argue with them is more about expressing what you think is right. This directly conflicts with your goal of connecting with people. So you need to decide if your why is important enough for you to hold your tongue and keep your ego in check. And the final mistake is monologuing and ranting. One of the worst things you can do while talking with someone is monologuing or ranting. With monologuing or ranting, you essentially engage in a one-way spiel rather than a two-way dialogue. If you recall, we touched on this in the very first chapter of this book, rambling on about a topic, talking at someone, and pontificating at length are all habits you should avoid at all costs. Monologuing tends to happen if someone is passionate about a topic or has been simmering about it for some time, and they want to express their feelings to others. In some ways, people who go off on monologues or rants are similar to people who like to argue. However, they often need little incentive to start and tend to go off on different tangents that deviate from the original topic. Once, while on an assignment in Southeast Asia, I took a cab with an elderly driver at the wheel. As we passed a side street, he pointed out a car that was illegally parked on the side of the road. He shook his head disapprovingly and mentioned how illegally parked cars cause traffic jams on narrow streets. I nodded to acknowledge his observation. He then talked about how these vehicles belong to corrupt local officials and would not get towed or impounded. Before I could say another word, he segued into how traffic police were corrupt and would shake down regular drivers. Then, this led him to a story about how he had once gotten a ticket and refused to pay a bribe to get out of it. His voice became increasingly agitated. It was evident from his tone that his anger was fresh and he had been simmering over the incident. On most occasions, the conversation starts off with something relatively benign. The monologuer, however, will manage to find a reason to rant. Once, at a neighbor's house party, a group of us were in a conversation about the local property market. One woman mentioned that home prices had increased steeply in recent years, and most of us agreed with her observation. She continued, "Do you know why home prices are so high in our area? Because of those tech companies moving here and all those yuppie out-of-towners renting places and pushing the prices up." As we politely listened, she then went off on a tangent about how tech workers were not even doing real work like manufacturing and production, which then led to a lecture about how China took all the manufacturing jobs and how the government could have done more to prevent this from happening. With each tangent, her speech became faster and more excitable, and it was clear she did not care if we were still interested as she rambled on. Soon, people in the group started looking around for an exit. If you've ever walked away from a conversation thinking, "Why did I go on like that? Why in the world didn't I just stop talking? What was I even ragging about?" then it will help you to devise a strategy to overcome the urge to monologue. One way is to use a fixed framework when you talk. A popular and effective framework is the PREP, or prep template, which stands for point, reason, example, and point. Start with a clear and concise point. Explain your reason or argument for the point, state an example that illustrates the point, and then end by restating the point to wrap things up. For example, here's the point. Martial arts are incredibly beneficial for kids. Now for the reason. Martial arts build coordination, strength, and stamina, which are crucial for becoming a healthy adult. It gives young kids mental discipline, perseverance, and self-confidence. It also helps them stand up for themselves against bullying. Next is the example. One of the greatest mixed martial art fighters, former UFC welterweight champion and UFC middleweight champion George St. Pierre, was bullied as a child. In his book, The Way of the Fight, he recounts being ambushed and robbed of his lunch money, even stripped of his clothes by the older bullies. After this, he started to train in martial arts and learned how to defend himself and rebuild his confidence. Today, he runs an anti-bullying organization to fight bullying and helps kids who have been bullied themselves. And then finally, the point. Get your kids into martial arts. It's a great way to build their physical and mental abilities. It will make them stronger, healthier, and more prepared for life. In this example, you can see how the prep structure forces you to stick to one topic, keep things short and succinct, and wrap up when the topic is done, so you can allow others to respond. Here's some key takeaways from this chapter. If you make a conversational mistake or faux pas, briefly acknowledge it, apologize if appropriate, and move on. Don't linger on it. Don't forego standard courtesies and conventions. Avoid inappropriate topics like religion and politics or issues too personal for the context. Avoid the following behaviors: interrogating, oversharing, bragging and one-upping, interrupting and hijacking, being argumentative, and monologuing or ranting. Use the PREP, point, reason, example, point, framework to avoid rambling. And finally, to help avoid these behaviors, remember your why and ask yourself if it's important enough to hold your tongue and keep your ego in check.